Good morning. My name is Sten. I'm the pastor here. Good to have you here. Really quickly, I don't usually take a second to look back, but we're pumped about the men's thing. I actually was kind of one of the brains behind that whole deal, and we just realized dudes aren't going to call it a retreat, and they're not going to call it some clever little name, and so we figured, well, what are they going to talk? How are they going to talk about it? What are they going to say? They're going to say, you're going to the men's thing. So we just figured, let's call it the men's thing. So I'll be there. And I'm hoping you'll be there too. We are in the third week of the series called Made for More, and here's the idea. We really just believe that when it comes to our lives as individuals and as a church, both things, we really believe that we were made for more than maybe what we're experiencing right now. So that's what this whole series is designed for us to see in our own lives and in our life together as a church. Where it is and how it is, we are made for more. So really glad you could be here for this week in the series. If you ask me, there's two pretty basic types of people in the world. There's spenders and there are savers. Okay, people who get money, the first thing they do is spend it. People get money and then the first thing they do, and sometimes like the only thing they do, is they save it. You probably know, you got a sense of who you are. If you don't, you just ask somebody close to you, because they probably got a real good idea whether or not you're a spender or a saver. I feel like I'm surrounded by spenders, and I always have. Even my own kids now, my older kids, 6 and 4, they're like spenders. They get a dollar from grandma, and they're like, can we go to Target? You know, they get $1. We go to the dollar store, and it's like, oh, man, the dollar store. They're just spending. My older siblings, they were always spenders. We would each kind of get the same amount of deal, and they're always spending, not doing much saving. So many of my in-laws, when Eric and I talk, same way, always spending, not saving. I, on the other hand, I'm 100%. A saver. I've always been a saver. It's true with the way that I use my money, but it's almost even more true, and this is kind of silly, almost embarrassing sometimes, but it's almost more true with the way that I use gifts that are given to me. Christmas gifts, birthday gifts, you know, people being kind to me. It's almost more true with gifts that are given to me. Erica's always giving me a hard time about this. We get a gift card to a nice restaurant, or we get a nice bottle of wine, or we get some movie passes or something. And my first reaction is I was like, ooh, great, let's save it. Let's hold on to this. You know, let's wait. And Erica's like, wait for what? And I'm like, let's not use it. Yet, right? Let's just wait a second. Let's wait for the right moment. And so often that moment never really comes, and so we end up just holding on to all this great stuff we got. I think I'm not joking about this. I think I have close to $100 in Cabela's gift cards from like the last two Christmases and birthdays of mine. I'm holding on to it. I'm waiting for something that I need. Now, I don't know where this came from in me, but I'm absolutely just a saver. When it comes to good gifts, kind gifts that people give to me, I save them. I hold on to them. I'm waiting and calculating for when and how to use them. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I don't know if that's right, or I don't know if that's wrong, but that just seems to be what I do with the gifts that are given to me. And you might be the same way as me. You might be the total opposite way. And I'm not about to suggest that one approach is better than the other when it comes to gifts that are given us. But here's what I started thinking about. Here's what I started asking myself. What about when it comes to the gifts that God gives to us? What about then? Right? What about the gifts that He's given to us? Does He have a preference? Right? When it comes to the things that, you know, the gifts and the talents and the resources and the opportunities, right? What should I do? How should I use? What should we do with the gifts that God has given us? And does He have a preference, right? I don't know if I can tell you when it comes to other gifts that are given us. I don't know if I can tell you if I have a preference or if one is better than the other. But what about with the gifts that God has given to us? Does He have a preference between spenders and savers with the good gifts and the time and the talent and the energy and the resources and the opportunities that He's given to us? I think this morning, hopefully what we're going to see here, I think the answer is yes, that God does have a preference. And spenders and savers, this is where we maybe start to depart a little bit. Spenders and savers might not be the best terms to describe God's desire for us and the gifts that He's given us, but I do think that He does have a preference with what we do with those gifts that He's given to us. Right? He's given us gifts and abilities and resources. He's given us these things for a reason. And those gifts look different for each of us. We may have been given a lot. We may have been given a little or not as much. We may have more than him, but less than her, right? But regardless of how much we've been given, we've all been given something, right? I think God has a preference then for what we do with what he has given to us, right? It's different for everyone. Different time, different talents, different experiences, different opportunities. But I think if we paused and took a little inventory, we'd see that God has given us something. He's been good to us. And I do think that he has a preference. I do think he has a preference for what we do with what he's given to us. And that's what I want us to see this morning. I want to see if I can answer that question for us. Does God have a preference? And I think the answer is yes. And I think God's desire for us when it comes to these gifts that he's given to us, I think it's highlighted in a story that Jesus is teaching to a crowd that has gathered to hear him speak. And when Jesus drew a crowd, like he often did, he often taught in these stories, and these stories were known as parables, okay? He often would teach in these stories, and these stories were known as parables. And parables were simply this. They're kind of just, you know, the everyday story. These made them up, right? They were kind of just like earthly stories to communicate spiritual truth. That's what a parable was, and that's how Jesus often taught. Everyday earthly stories to communicate spiritual truth. And it's in one of these parables that I think we see God's desire for us. Maybe we start to see God's preference, if he had one, for what we do with the gifts that he has given us. And so here's the story. Here's the parable that he tells. I'm going to read it for us. It's found in Matthew chapter 25, and I'm going to start reading this for us here. Jesus is speaking to these crowds, and again, he's using a story to communicate a spiritual truth. Here's what he says. Again, the kingdom of heaven, he starts with this story. The kingdom of heaven can be illustrated by the story of a man going on a long trip. And he called together his servants and he entrusted his money to them while he was gone. And he gave 5 bags of silver to one, 2 bags of silver to another, and 1 bag of silver to the last, dividing it in proportion or dividing it according to their abilities. And then he left on his trip. The story goes on. The servant who received 5 bags of silver began to invest the money and earned 5 more. The servant with 2 bags of silver went to work and earned 2 more. But the servant who received 1 bag of silver, he dug a hole in the ground and he hid his master's money. I got to be honest. I feel like I'd be a lot like this third guy. Like, man, I didn't get as much as these guys. I don't want to mess this up. I don't want to lose what I've been, you know, given. I better be careful with what I got, right? So he digs a hole and he buries it, okay? Here's how that plays out for all of them. Jesus continues to tell this story. He says, after a long time, their master returned from his trip and he called them to give an account for how they had used his money. And the servant who had been entrusted with the 5 bags of silver came forward with 5 more and said, Master, you gave me 5 bags of silver to invest, and I earned 5 more. And the master was full of praise, and he said, well done, my good and faithful servant. You have been faithful in handling this small amount, so now I will give you many more responsibilities. Let's celebrate together, this master says. It goes on, verse 22. The servant who had received 2 bags of silver came forward and said, Master, you gave me 2 bags of silver to invest, and I've earned 2 more. And the master said yet again, well done, my good and faithful servant. You've been faithful in handling this small amount, so now I'll give you more responsibilities. Let's celebrate together. Then the servant with 1 bag of silver came forward and he said, Master, I knew you were a harsh man. Harvesting crops he didn't plant and gathering crops he didn't cultivate. He's going, I knew you're a harsh man, and so I was afraid that I would lose your money, so I hid it in the earth. But he's going, but don't worry. Look, here is your money back. I still got it for you. I kind of feel for the guy, if I'm being honest. He didn't have as much as the others. He wasn't given as much from the start, and he doesn't want to screw it up. He doesn't want to lose it. He doesn't want to misuse it, so he plays it safe till his master comes back, and he probably thinks he's being somewhat responsible, you know, with what he had been giving, hoping his master would feel the same way. Hey, you know, thanks, buddy. Thanks for watching over this stuff. Glad you didn't lose it. Glad you took care of it. Glad I could trust you with it. Good work. I'm guessing that he's hoping the master kind of responds in that way, but that's not exactly how the master replies. Look at what he says, verse 26. The story goes on. But the master replied, you wicked and lazy servant. If you knew that I harvested crops, I didn't plant, and gathered crops, I didn't cultivate, why didn't you at least deposit my money in the bank? Right? At least then I could have gotten some interest on it. Do something with it. And so then he ordered, take the money from this servant and give it to the one with the 10 bags of silver. To those who use well what they are given, even more will be given, and they will have an abundance. But from those who do nothing, even what little they have will be taken away. Earthly story to communicate spiritual truth. Okay, now the warning here in this story, it feels like kind of a harsh one. It feels like kind of a stern warning, and in a lot of ways it is, but I want to make one thing very clear before we go on here about the point of this parable. The point of the parable is not about the return on their investment. Okay, we might be focusing on, wow, he got X amount more and he got X amount. The point of the story in the parable is not about the return on their investment. If we look closely, it's about their response. It's about the response to the investment that is made into them in the first place, right? The first two guys who earn five more and two more, they're not praised for earning. They're praised for using, okay? They took what was given to them and they took a chance on it and they put it into use, right? If we look back through what the story says, the master doesn't say, well done, my good and faithful servant, you made lots of money. He doesn't say, hey, well done, you made so much more. No, he says, well done, my good and faithful servant. You were faithful. He says, you were faithful with the gifts that I had given according to your ability. He didn't say, good work, you made so much. He said, no, you were just faithful with what I gave to you in the first place. It's not about the fact that they earned more, but it's about the fact that they used what they had been given in the first place. And this parable, I think, is meant to help us to see the same kind of thing is true with the gifts that God has given us, the time and the talent and the energy and the resources that God has given us. God wants us to use what he has given. And here's the good news about that. Before we keep unpacking this, here's the good news when we really understand what's happening here. God wants us to use what he's given to us, and we can rest assured that we're not measured according to the return on that investment. We're being measured according to our faithful response to the investment that is first made into us, right? It's not about how much we earn. It's not about how much, you know, we do or how much we had from the start. It's not what it's about, because the truth is not everyone has been given the same. Not everyone's been given the same gifts or talents or abilities or resources. And yet what we see in this parable is that each of us can still respond faithfully in our own unique way, according to our own unique abilities and opportunities, according to what God has given to us. Each of us can still contribute in a unique way to the kingdom that God is building on earth. Doesn't matter how much we've been given. It's never about an amount. It's never about how much we had. It's never about how much we kind of did as a result. Right? We're simply measured according to our faithful response to an investment that God made into us in the first place. And when this becomes clear, I think we can start then to see what it is that maybe God's preference is for what we do with the gifts we have. Like I said, spender and saver, that might not be the best ways to describe this, Saul, but I think God has a preference. He gave us what he did for a reason. And here's what this parable says to me about what that reason is. That God gave us gifts to be productive with them, not protective of them. And I think we kind of see that highlighted, especially in this third guy who received a gift from God and got kind of protective of it. But what I think we see in this parable is that God gave us gifts to be productive with them in the kingdom that he is building, not to be protective of them. Right, the story illustrates that God has given gifts to us, and he's not going, hey, you better be careful with this. You know, if you're worried or nervous, you know, maybe just sock it away. Maybe just take that gift and that talent and ability I've given to you. Maybe just keep it a secret for a while. No, it becomes clear that God has a purpose. God has a preference when he gave us what he did, right? To be productive with it, not protective of it. And I'm not saying in any way, just in case you're trying to figure out where exactly is this going. I'm not suggesting in any way that we need to be reckless or irresponsible, right? But maybe we need to be challenged to do more than we thought was possible or than what we would do according to our own natural tendencies. Because if I'm being honest, that you know, this message is as hard for me as I imagine it will be for any of you. If I'm being really honest, this kind of thinking, it's really hard for me. My natural tendency in many things, my natural tendency is to be cautious and to be a little more calculated and to be a little more protective of the gifts that are given to me. Gift cards, the restaurants, or spiritual gifts from God. My natural tendency is to be protective of it. I got to make sure this lasts. I got to make sure this doesn't run out. I got to make sure I, you know, have enough of this still to, you know, for tomorrow. That's my natural tendency, is to be protective of what's been given to me, whether it's a gift card to a restaurant or a gift that God has given to me. My natural tendency is to be protective. I want to give you two just very real life examples here, current examples in my life, not so that you can, you know, applaud for me, but you can see how this is like a real deal. It's hard for me. Here's the first example of how this plays out in my life. Ever since Eric and I have got married almost 11 years ago now, I've been working in church and in ministry. And if I wanted to be in a money-making field, I would have not chose the profession that I did, okay? So ever since we've chosen to do that, we also made a commitment. We also made a commitment that 10% of everything that we make would go right back to the church. That's the first check that we write. It's a check right back to God, except we don't write checks anymore. Everything's like automated, but you get the idea, right? So that's the first 10% that we give back. In addition to that, we took a step and we said, you know what, we're going to support a child. His name is Salem in the Congo. And we spend $40 a month to help him with his education and his health care and his nutrition. And that's not a lot. If you think, oh, you're not, another $40, that's not a lot. But when you add it all together, all of a sudden we start feeling like, okay, that's kind of a lot. And then, right, we want to be contributing to what God is doing. Then this past year, the summer camp where I grew up, I went there as a kid. I worked there almost every summer in high school, in college. That's where I still take my kids and my family every summer for the most heavenly week of vacation. There's a good chance that if I'm ever not here on a Sunday morning, it's because I'm at this camp in Michigan. It's like one of the only places I, you know, ever take a Sunday off for. Super special place to me. And they asked this year if we could give to the capital campaign that they're starting to run to build a new dining hall, because their current one is incredibly outdated and it's inadequate to serve the people that the camp was serving in really pretty incredible ways. There isn't a life that is not impacted because of the work of this camp. I've seen it with my own eyes. And so they started a capital campaign, and Eric and I felt like, ooh, we'd love to support that. We'd love to be in on that. But then we looked at what we had left, and we got protective of it. Mm-mm. Can't happen. Nope. You know, nothing left to give. Can't do it. We need it. We want it. Right? There's not enough to go around. Love camp, but not this time. And after a while, that didn't really sit well with us. And we wanted we wanted to give. We wanted to do that. And so we started getting what we thought was creative. And I'm not proud of this, but we started doing what we thought was, you know, getting creative. We're going, well, like, what if we stopped our giving to World Vision? Then maybe we could be supportive of this. What if we gave less to the church and just kind of redirected some over to the camp? Maybe that would work. And as ashamed as I am to admit it, these were actual ideas of ours that we kicked around. But here's the deal. These were ideas that were not demonstrating how creative we were. They are ideas that were demonstrating how protective we were of what God had given to us in the first place. They are ideas that demonstrate how protective we were of the investment that God made into us from the very beginning. So for a while, the answer was no, can't happen, not going to do it. But neither Eric and I were satisfied with that. And so we looked again. We double backed and we had some conversation and we prayed and we decided, you know what, we can. They're running a 3-year campaign. We said, we can. For the next 3 years, we're going to make a small contribution every month. And the reason why we could feel good about that is because we know that we're not measured according to any type of return on an investment of ours. We're measured according to a response to an investment that was first made into us. And so we said, yeah, we're going to do it. And I, like I said, I hesitate to even say that because I don't want people thinking I'm up here just looking for people to pat me on the back. I'm not trying to do that. I'm just trying to be honest about this is a hard deal for us. This is a hard deal for me. My natural tendency is to protect and to preserve and to play it safe and to make sure I don't ever run out. But we knew that that wasn't what we really wanted to do in the end. Why? Because we're not meant to be protective with what God has given to us. We're meant to be productive for what it is that God was doing in the kingdom that he's building here on this earth. Okay, but here's the deal. It's not just the money thing for any of us. It's not just the money thing for me, though, either. It's also about the gifts and the talents, right? I was kind of calling these things spiritual gifts. It's sometimes it's about the gifts and the talents and the abilities that we have that can contribute to God's kingdom, too. And I'm challenged here with this same kind of thing. In fact, just this past week, as I was preparing this message, I kid you not, just this past week, a colleague of mine reached out to me and he asked me for some help with something. He's in charge of a fall retreat, kind of a fall getaway for a large group of pastors in our region, and he needed someone to lead worship on Tuesday night at this retreat. And he was explaining to me that he really wanted to try to, you know, kind of up the worship experience to another level than had, you know, than was sometimes typical of this event in the past. And so he said, "Sten, would you help me do this?" You may not know that I was a worship leader for many years in previous places of ministry. I even did that for the first year of this church here, and I've always been grateful for the gift that God gave me to do that well and for the places that I was able to do that. But when this colleague asked me, "Sten, would you help me make this worship experience possible?" My first response was like, "Ugh. I don't want to do that." And he knew it. He even said in the email, "You're probably already looking for excuses right now," with a little wink face. He was dead on. My first response is like, "Oh." And there's a few reasons for that. Number one, sometimes these gatherings, I hope none of my like superiors are listening to this, sometimes they're not like the most exhilarating experiences to be a part of. They're good for us to be together as pastors, and there's some good things that happen, but sometimes they're not like the most exhilarating thing. So I'm kind of like, "I don't know if I want to do that." Number two, I just really honestly, planting a church, doing what we're doing here, it keeps me busy enough. And you know, creating a dynamic worship experience elsewhere, it takes a lot of work and it takes a lot of creativity. And number three, I'm kind of going like, "I don't know, I don't do that a ton anymore," right? I kind of stopped strumming my guitar a while ago so that I could focus on some other places that I felt like God was calling me to lead. And so all in all, my response was, "Nope, I can't. Can't do it. This is not going to work. I don't have enough time. I don't have enough energy. I don't have the availability. There's no way. It's not possible. Way too much. I don't have enough of whatever to make this possible." So if you can't tell, I didn't really want to say yes to this. But then the message that I was currently writing and the message that I'm currently delivering started bouncing around in my head. God didn't give us gifts and talents and abilities and opportunities to be protective of them. Don't have enough. He gave us this stuff to be productive with them for the kingdom that he's building on earth. And so when I realized, this is like happening real time, I'm telling you folks, when I realized that maybe God could use my talent to encourage the hearts of tired, hardworking pastors who are investing into and pouring into people's lives all across the upper Midwest, when I realized that God could maybe use my gifts to encourage their hearts, my response was, "Darn it, I think I'm going to have to do this." And so I said, "Yes, I'm in." And I've been working now to try to create the most dynamic experience that I can for this group of pastors, this gathering together. I don't want to be protective of what God has given to me. I want to be productive with it for the sake of the kingdom work that he is doing around us. And folks, I'm telling you, I'm honestly not trying to tell you this stuff so you say, "Wow, aren't you so great, Pastor Sten?" I'm just telling you this to try and tell you that I get that this is a hard thing to do. This is a hard mentality to have sometimes, right? Both of these decisions are ones that like I'm still worried about. Like, ugh, you know, can we make this stuff happen? Can I pull this stuff off without just emptying all the tanks, right? Is this really gonna work out? And I imagine there are places in your life where you feel the same way. Do I have to? Can I really pull this off? Am I gonna have enough? Am I gonna have enough time? Am I gonna have enough energy? Am I gonna have enough money? Do I have enough talent to make this happen? And if you're anything like me, when you start asking those questions, it's really easy to just answer, nope, don't. I don't have enough time, don't have enough money, don't have enough anything. I can't do it, not gonna happen. And so this morning, as we kind of unpack this parable, looking at not the return on the investments these guys make, but if we look at the response to the investment that's made into them. This morning, I just want to challenge you and me to think about how and where and when we can be productive with what God has given to us, not protective of it. Productive, you know, not in the sense of a return. It's not an amount. It's not productive in the sense that, you know, it's some kind of return on investment that we're looking at, but productive in the sense that we're responding to an investment that's first made into us. Maybe God has given you, I don't know, maybe God has given you resources that are unique to you, that not many people experience. Maybe God has given you talents and abilities that are unique to you, that not everybody has, that you can use to contribute to the kingdom that he wants to see expand here on this earth. It might not be unlimited resources. It might not be unending time and talent and opportunities, but it is something. It is a gift that God has given to you that he's hoping, I think, that he's hoping you'd be productive with, not protective of. This is a question that I'm asking of us too as a church, right? It's a question I want to ask you as individuals, right? Well, where could this, you know, encourage you? Where could this challenge you in your own life to be productive with what it is that God has given to you, right? It's a question I want to ask us as individuals here this morning, but it's also a question that I'm asking of us too as a church. Right, for those of us that call this place home, it's a question I'm asking of us too collectively, right? That the gifts and the abilities and the resources of the people gathered here, I mean, even from the very beginning, the first 30 people that God sent here, is incredible, the gifts and the talents that were represented. I mean, it was like the perfect, you know, group. It wasn't the perfect people, but it was the perfect mix of people. And the same has been true ever since. It's remarkable that the wide variety of gifts and abilities and talents and resources that God has brought into the mix here to help us become who we are. And I think we too as a church need to be challenged not to be protective of the gifts that God has given us and that God has assembled here. But I think we too need to be challenged to be productive with them for the sake of the world and for the sake of the community around us and for the sake of the kingdom that God wants to see built. And we're trying, and by we, oftentimes that means me, we're trying to figure out how and where and when we do that best here at MidCurrent, that we work to be productive with what God has given us, not protective of it. We're working hard to figure out how we do that best. And if I'm being honest, sometimes I have big old pipe dreams, right? I'm just kind of a dreamer. I just kind of think big and think forward. I have big pipe dreams for how and where we would be productive with the gifts and the resources that are representative here. I'll tell you one of those dreams. I have no idea if it's even close to being a reality. I have no idea if it's even close to being a remote possibility that we ever do anything like this, but I would love to build houses for people. Affordable, you know, spaces to live for, you know, single parents or veterans or people with special needs or certain disabilities. I would love to go on, that's what we're doing. We're trying to, you know, build houses for people that need it. Now that honestly, I mean, truly is just a fantasy of mine. Like when I close my eyes, if you know me at all, you know that I'm lucky to like get the light bulb changed in the house, let alone, you know, build a whole house for somebody and figure out a way to get it to them, okay? So this really is just a fantasy. Who knows if, who knows when, who knows how something like this could ever happen. Maybe it happens, maybe it never happens, I don't know. But in the meantime, regardless of what happens, I want us to be taking a step toward doing something. Right? We may not be like Hudson's, you know, like newest construction company, but we got to be taking a step toward doing something. And so that's what we're going to do. For the next couple weeks, we're going to try to do something. For the next couple weeks, we're going to run just a little campaign that we're calling Fill It Up. It's a little campaign we're calling Fill It Up that's going to benefit the work that the United Way does to provide for those in our community who need it most. And so starting today, here's what we're going to do for the next 2 weeks. Starting today and ending on October 6th, we're asking you to do one or both of two things with the time and the energy and the resources and the creativity that you have. We're asking you to do one of two things. We're asking you to take one or two or three or four of these home today, and we're asking you to fill up one of these bags with groceries, or we're asking you to fill up this bucket with cold hard cash or checks to the United Way to provide money for food that's needed to fill the shelves of the food pantries that they support most. It's a two-week campaign. Fill it up. Fill up a bag with groceries. Fill up a bucket with money. Money actually that they can use at a way better rate than we can get to provide food for the people that need it most. Fill it up for 2 weeks. That's what we're hoping that you would do. Why? Here's a little bit of what I learned about our communities. 1 in 9 households in the state of Wisconsin are considered to be food insecure, which means they lack assured access. It's not that they don't ever have it, but they cannot be sure of it. They lack assured access to sufficient food that will support a healthy and active lifestyle. 1 in 9 houses in the state of Wisconsin, okay? But if we dial that into our own communities here, get this, 42% of Pierce County residents, that's almost 1 in 2. Almost 5 for every 10, right? 42% of Pierce County residents and 34% of St. Croix County residents struggle to meet basic monthly food needs, meaning that they either run out of food or they cut back on the size of the meals or they skip meals altogether. And for so many families, that's just the first domino then to fall in a whole list of other, you know, kind of adverse effects that this has. And so these kind of statistics for me are surprising. They're kind of alarming for a fairly new resident to the great communities that we call home. And I would love to see those percentages start trending in the other direction. And I would love to think that we maybe could just play even the smallest part in that. And so that's what we're taking the next few weeks to provide you the opportunities to fill up one or two or three or four of those bags or to fill up this bucket. The bucket's going to be here today for the next 2 weeks. These bags are going to be available for you today and next week. We got 100 of them. We'll get more if we need to. I mean, I would love to blow them away, like them going like, man, we've never seen so many grocery bags from one small little group before, right? So these bags are going to be here for you today with a list of the top 5 needs that they have right now. And then on October 6th, we're asking you to bring those back here. We're asking you to bring back those bags and bring every last, you know, donation that you want to bring into this bucket. We're going to load up a truck, and we're going to deliver what I'm hoping is at least 100 bags of groceries, and what I'm hoping is at least many hundreds of dollars to support the work that the United Way is doing in these communities that we call home. Is it the like greatest, most grandest step that we could ever take as a church? I'm not sure. I mean, is it the only way? Is it the best way for us to start impacting this community around us? Probably not. I don't know. There's countless ways that we could be making a difference here. But as a young church that's just getting up and running, I want us to take some kind of step. I want us to start to get in the habit of being productive with the gifts that God has given us, not protective of them. I want us to start getting in the habit of being productive, not protective of the time and of the talent and of the energy and of the resources that God has given to us. I think that if this is the attitude that we have in our own lives, And if this is the attitude that we have collectively as one church here, I think God's kingdom will start to be evident a whole lot more on this earth of ours, just as it is in heaven. I think that is something that all of us can get behind. So my encouragement for all of us in this way and in many other ways in our lives is to figure out how we can be productive with what it is that God has given us, not protective of it. That we would not be concerned about some kind of gain, some kind of return on an investment, but that we would just be worried about a faithful response to God's investment in us in the first place. Let me pray for us. God, thanks for this morning, and thanks for a few weeks that we have here just to dream about so many different things that you're doing, not only in our lives, but in the life of this church. God, we really do believe that we are way more, and we're made for way more, I should say, God. We really believe we are made for way more. And we're asking that you would help us to see, that you help us to identify steps that we can take. God, help us to see the resources that you have given us, the time, the talent, the energy, whatever it is, God, it's different for all of us, but I know that we can all contribute to this kingdom that you are building in our own unique way and in a way that makes you say, well done, my good and faithful servant. All of us, God, have that ability to respond in a way that is unique to us. And so I'm praying that you would help us to see what impact that we can have and that you would give us the courage and the boldness to go ahead and do it, God. And I pray that you would just blow us away with the good things that happen as a result. So God, we thank you for this morning. We thank you for this chance to be here, and we're praying that you would go ahead of us and lead the way for the greater things that we believe are yet to come. And we pray these all in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.